Hello and welcome to the TAA Audio Conference, Kicking It Out the Door, How to Finally Submit Your First Journal Article. Today I will be interviewing four authors about how they finally kicked a journal article out the door and the fears that had kept them from doing it. All will share advice for other authors who are still working on getting their manuscript to the submission stage. Karen Lindstrom-Bremer, Ph.D., is an assistant professor and the research generalist in the Department of Counseling and Student Personnel at Minnesota State University, Mankato. She is in her fourth year of teaching and goes up for tenure and promotion in fall 2011. She decided while a graduate student that too many faculty she knew were paralyzed when it came to writing, so she made it her mission to not be one of those people, to instead be a comfortable or at least a productive writer. She intentionally uses resources, both human and books articles, to help her grow in her relationship with writing. She is mindful of the courage it takes to write and sometimes has to convince herself to be courageous while at the keyboard. Coming from a multidisciplinary background, she has written about social aspects of medicine and nursing, as well as sports psychology and youth sport topics. Jane Karwoski is an experimental psychologist teaching online for a variety of universities and colleges. She combines cognitive, social, and health psychology in her emphasis on the psychosocial aspects of genetics and genomics. As personal genomics and newborn screening expand, more and more people are learning that they carry genetic material that could affect or has affected the next generation. Jane's focus on the impact of that knowledge is reflected in her blog and Twitter persona, My Blue Genome. In addition to the social impact of carrier status, her academic writing projects include healthcare improvement through implementation of best practices and the interplay between propositional and tacit knowledge. Carol Ferguson Nardone is an associate professor and director of the Writing in the Disciplines Initiative at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. She holds a Ph.D. in Rhetoric and Professional Communication from New Mexico State University and has published articles on workplace writing, visual rhetoric, and writing assessment across disciplinary boundaries. Her most recent article, the culmination of a year-long teaching and research project, appears in the January 2011 issue of College Teaching and was co-authored with Renee Gervoy Lee, an associate professor in the College of Business at SHSU. Carol has also co-authored Technical Communication as Problem Solving, an e-textbook with Molly Johnson and Tina Carnegie, both of Eastern Washington University, available this summer from Kendall Hunt Publishers. Carol directs an annual workshop aimed at helping faculty across disciplines incorporate more writing into their course assignments and get more comfortable about using writing as a tool for critical thinking, both in their courses and in their own writing. Barbara Tora Veltri, Ph.D., is an assistant professor in the College of Education at Northern Arizona University. She is the author of the award-winning book, Learning on Other People's Kids, Becoming a Teach for America Teacher, published by Information Age Publishers in 2010. The book was noted as one of the top three books on education reform by Dr. Diane Ravitch in the Washington Post. She holds permanent teacher certification, N-12, New York and Connecticut, and earned her doctorate in curriculum and instruction from Arizona State University. Her research interests include alternative pathways to teaching and policies that impact teachers and children living in poverty across the U.S. and globe. She is the author of Teaching or Service, The Site-Based Realities of Teach for America Teachers in Poor Urban Schools, a journal article published in Education and Urban Society in July 2008, and an upcoming international journal article entitled A Tale of Two Countries, Teach for America and Teach for India, Globalized Educational Reform for the Public Good. Hello, Karen, Jane, Carol, and Barbara, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Kim, thank
you. Welcome, Kim, hi.
Well, let's start with what fears or obstacles kept you from considering your article ready to submit? Karen?
For me, it wasn't about fears that kept me from considering my article ready to submit. Rather, my fears were about my choice of journal, that this particular article was my heart's desire, so I had a lot riding on it, and that I was taking a risk that it might not fit my department. So I had chosen a high-reaching journal in my field of training rather than my field of employment, and I was about to give them my field of training a new topic, which is sports, that hasn't been studied in family science before, and for years I've wanted to bridge that my disciplines of both sports psychology and family studies, and I knew this journal would be the best place. My heart's desire is to bridge those disciplines, this journal was my first choice to successfully do that. And these things are all potential pre-tenure risk because I teach in yet a different but related field of counselor education. As a result, my fit in the department might be questioned. On top of this, the bigger picture stuff was that it was my first author and single author paper, so I was really stuck. The act of kicking it out the door has given me confidence in the tenure process. I have other publications since becoming an assistant professor, but this one shows the national level leadership that my promotion and tenure folks were looking for out of me, and I've learned that trusting my own process and having courage in my choices will be good enough for me, even if it isn't exactly the journal they might want it in. And after the article was accepted, I found out that they were just excited for me, and they were accepting of my choice of journal.
Well, I like to consider myself a recovering perfectionist, but when it came to getting submitted or submitting an article, I still had that standard of perfection. And intellectually, I realized the standards weren't that high because, after all, look at some of the things that get published, right? But somehow I felt like, well, maybe I didn't belong there, or I had put taking part in the conversation up on a really high pedestal. And whatever it was, it ran pretty deep. So that was something I had to overcome. Also, I think not trusting in the writing process, that the very process of writing is what clears the fog. And I veered away from writing because I felt like I didn't have it all figured out yet. So I was forgetting that feeling of creative energy that comes from solving problems through writing, which I really enjoy.
Okay, Carol?
Yes. Well, if I have a single fear about my writing, it's probably about how I'm perceived within my own department and how I legitimize my field for my colleagues. For a long time, I was the only tech writer in my department, and my journals and my field differ dramatically in form and in content from what and where my literature colleagues are publishing. And so I always felt like I had to justify my research and justify my way of talking before I presented any of it, not because I don't know what to say, but because my audience is also my colleagues who are going to wind up judging my progress toward tenure and post-tenure review. So in the back of my mind, I guess I was always thinking about my job while writing, what was essentially justifying my existence. And after you feel like, you know, you're justifying your existence and that's your only goal, it really becomes a progress zapper. Nothing I wrote ever seemed good enough. And so it took a strong editor pointing that out to me and telling me in no uncertain terms that my article was weakened by the time that I would spend justifying myself. And it took that for me to be able to see what moves that I was actually making in my own writing. She accepted a strong proposal and liked it initially, but when I delivered the final product, you know, it was less than what she was expecting, and she told me so, and asked me to significantly re-envision what I had done, and that was really, really helpful because her clear directions in editing my work helped me to see that weakness, and now I'm very careful to post my purpose in a single sentence in plain sight every time I write so that I don't get sidetracked into justifying myself again.
Thank you, Carol. Barbara?
Yes, Kim. The main obstacle for me was I had so many different projects going simultaneously, and I would call what my fear was and obstacle was multi-topic writing, which meant that I had a manuscript here, a manuscript there, and even versions of one that were going simultaneously. Hence, none were considered really finished off, and this tactic impacted my effectiveness. So that was one issue with obstacles. And as far as fear is concerned, I think that all creative types deal with the question, is it finished? Is it good enough? And I recall one mentor advising, don't look for any more data or any more information. Get one finished, get it done, and send it. And that was good advice.
Thank you. So how did you finally kick it out the door?
Karen? Well, I did a lot of concrete things. My first step was to confide in my dean about how stuck and miserable I was. His trust in my ability and his offer of help tipped me in the right direction. I teach my graduate students about developing a relationship with their writing, a good relationship, and having courage in the research and writing process. I can't just pay lip service to those things. I think it's my responsibility to be a role model for my students, however ugly it feels sometimes to me personally. So one way I've worked on my relationship with my writing and my courage is to use resources. So other steps that I've taken included connecting with my old writing consultant. When I was a doctoral student, I went to the Writing Center at my university quite a few times. I've participated in some writing workshops on my campus. I've read and reread Publish and Flourish by Tara Gray and How to Write a Lot by Paul Sylvia. They're both little books. I read about them or learned about them both first through the TAA newsletter. And I read and reread articles specifically about how to write a lit review because that's the kind of paper I was working on at the time. Returning to writing on a daily basis, just like I had done to finish my dissertation, is another thing that I did. And I posted a quote next to my computer monitor that says, "If we had to say what writing is, we would have to define it essentially as an act of courage," by Cynthia Ozick. And then the last fun thing is after I'd gotten my first round of reviews from the journal, I had an advisee, a doctoral advisee, who was re-careering from being a book editor into our field. So while it might not work for everyone to work with students, this is a quality student I got to work with a high level of skill, and we just worked as a team very well to help edit my process as I went through reviews.
Well, I found, Kim, this is Jane, that working with a TAA mentor gave me a really objective and fortunately positive assessment of my work because I found I just couldn't discount the opinion of someone I knew had the credentials and experience to make an informed judgment. So that was a confidence booster. And I knew that I had something to say, which is probably the first step, right? So in doing that, I think transitioning from graduate school and my postdoc was to go from being a passenger to being the driver with confidence that I knew where I was going, where I wanted to end up, and what I had to say. So I think during the previous periods, I had more or less abdicated my voice, you might say, and was too open to suggestions. You know, you may not be able to avoid that in some situations, but it certainly wasn't helpful afterwards. I came to a realization, therefore, that writing was something that I had to do for myself, not for anybody else, and something I had to do by myself because I always thought it would be easier with collaborators, but my experience was not that way. I had problems getting a turnaround when I would try to collaborate with people. And so just realizing, hey, I'm going to have to do this myself. Nobody else is going to come along and rescue me or that I can lean on. So that enabled me to stop waiting for help and start taking care of business. So I also went back to the motivation and source of my research that I was trying to write up and chose a journal on that basis and wrote for that audience, which I felt I knew fairly well. And I think another thing that was holding me back was not being satisfied with statistical analysis of my data. And strangely, that was solved when I noticed in reviewing the articles that I was, in a sense, conversing with, that there was a rather sketchy grasp of on statistics. People thought that an instrument had been validated, and it was constantly being referred to as validated when I knew it hadn't been validated, and that was part of what I was doing. So that I decided to take an approach which would simplify the statistics or make the more complicated analysis not necessary and just approach it more directly, and that helped a lot too.
Thank you, Jane. Carol?
For me, I think it was reading and analyzing several journals, both in and out of my field, and figuring out not just what the authors meant, but how the authors meant. And that became a real key for me. I'm paraphrasing a book by Charles Bazerman who differentiates what words mean from how words mean. And in a sense, I really had to come to understand that what I was creating was new knowledge. It was my way of looking at whatever the issue was that I was taking on. And I had to think about how I structured that new knowledge before I could really figure out how to reach my audience. I've taught the primacy of audience in all my academic life, and I do believe firmly in the rhetorical challenge of writing to meet the audience's need. But really, it was the realization that how words mean is often more important than what the words mean that kicked it in for me and got that first one out the door. In a nutshell, I guess I could say that studying the moves that other writers made, published writers made, helped me gain the confidence that I knew how to write for that particular journal and that I was an insider to their secret, if you will. Otherwise, it always felt like I was an outsider looking in. And I guess it means that I had to go back and be a student of writing for a little while and not just a teacher of writing. And it was a bit humbling since, you know, I do work in the Writing of the Disciplines program. You know, a lot of my colleagues assumed that I had this innate ability to write because I was able to help them with theirs.
All right. Thank you, Carol. Barbara?
Well, you know, so many people talk about writing groups and mentors and coaches, but you know what? For me, they became a distraction and in some cases a major roadblock or liability when it came to getting the manuscript kicked out the door. Many of my peers, who were mostly assistant professors themselves, gave me advice. It was very well intended, and I started to go to writing groups, but I just realized that they had a different idea of where my research should go after they read it, and they started to give me all of their ideas, and then that made me reconceptualize, re-theorize my data, and that really took me down a completely different path and was really a delay. So even with my book's manuscript, a very dear friend suggested reframing my original intent, and I started to say why, and because she was giving me advice from her writing lens and not mine. So while that is what researchers do, writers either have to get command of how they are going to organize their data, characters, and story, or they hand it off to others' whims and suggestions, and nothing concrete gets done. So then what happens is you beat yourself up, you lose confidence, and trash the piles of paper into another pile, and they continue to pile up. So with each of my published articles, especially my first, I shared the manuscript with no one. I wrote, I edited, and even typed the references myself. I focused on one journal that I researched thoroughly and angled the manuscript's data to fit their audience. I knew that I was the expert on my topic and had to funnel the huge data, you know, sort of like a tornado, and set it to fit the journal's 28-page article guideline, which included references. And then, believe it or not, I also became very still and offered a prayer or some kind of quiet time before I approached each writing session. I didn't touch one computer key until I was quiet, till I was focused and ready for guidance and clarity, because I wanted to write what was meant to be written and engage the reader. And I found that this approach always provided me with either key sources or ways of analyzing the work that I never considered previously. I would also suggest that writers submit their manuscript to a journal that doesn't regularly publish articles from top-tier invited authors, because then you are, as I found out, open for rejections.
Jean, you used a life coach. Can you share why you decided to use a life coach and how he or she helped you?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I felt like I had some issues that I needed to work through, and also the way I was using my time. And my coach helped by pointing out that work was claiming an inordinate amount of my energy. It wasn't that I was doing a lot of work, and by that I mean the writing especially, but also my teaching. But the writing was the thing that had the logjam. And I was just thinking all the time, rather than doing it, I was thinking that I should be doing it almost every hour of every day. I was thinking that. So as a result, I felt I shouldn't be doing anything else. And you can imagine that does not produce a happifying life. So what helped was to consider the other areas of my life and give them equal importance, the importance they deserved. For instance, socializing so that I built up my social network, my friends, also physical exercise and attending to that part of my life. My husband and I go for a 2 to 4 mile walk every morning. And so that, you know, takes time, but I know that that is something that is really valuable and enjoyable, so I enjoy that. And reading for pleasure, even, is a part of my life. So paradoxically, de-emphasizing work and writing helped me to get more work actually done and free up my mind for enjoying most of the day. I've adopted an I'm retired mindset when I'm not teaching or writing, so that, you know, that off time is much more fulfilling. I don't spend the time worrying about, oh, I'm not writing. Once I do the writing, it's done, and I can enjoy the rest of the day.
Jean, you have recently submitted a journal article that has not been accepted for publication. So are you going to wait to hear about this submission's acceptance before starting another article, or have you already done so? And how has the act of finally kicking one out the door given you the confidence to keep up that momentum?
Well, yeah, it's still out there. So I'm waiting to hear, but I'm not inactive, because absolutely not. I would not want to put a hold on other writing, because who knows how long it could take to hear back. And I have a backlog of projects to write up, so I started in on the next in queue immediately, while simultaneously celebrating, because that was the first article that I had actually finally submitted. And it feels much simpler now. So I began the thematic analysis of interviews I did a while back for another article, and I pretty much know what I need to do and just do it in that case. So, yeah, to keep up the momentum, you do need to keep writing, definitely.
Thank you. So, all of you again, when did you devote time to completing your journal article? Did you write in blocks of time every day, or was it a summer project? Karen?
I try to write every day. When I'm in the thick of the project, so like this one, I write 5 days a week. When I feel scared, I return to Tara Gray's book or Paul Sylvia's book to rope myself in, to get grounded, and to get writing. In between papers, I go for weeks without writing, but I am making better progress towards writing every day than I used to when I first became an assistant professor. I also do write a lot in the summer. Once my summer teaching is done, I front load that teaching. But once I'm done in June, I write a few days a week by either going to a friend's office and sitting with her quietly writing, or go to my local community college library and write there.
In my case, that my time varies, I have to say. For a while, one thing will work, and then when it doesn't work, I have to come up with something else. But because my husband retires for the night fairly early, I can work from around the early evening to 11 or 12 at night, and in there devote at least 1 hour to writing. And it's quiet, no interruptions, and best of all, the rest of the day, you know, starting at the beginning of the day, the following day, I feel free to enjoy whatever has to be done the next day, because I've already done my writing. I consider the day to begin with my writing at whatever time I do it. And as I say, with the change of seasons, for example, now it stays lighter, longer. So I'm having to adjust that. But I always think it's perfectly okay to tweak your schedule. Also, I have a friend in Pennsylvania that holds me accountable between emails and late-night phone calls. We're 3 hours different, so you can imagine it's really late her time, but she's a night owl, so we have a great time. And she's very good at telling me how fantastic I'm doing, so that's a big help, too.
Thank you. Carol, how about you?
Well, I think when I realized that writing my own articles makes me a better teacher, that's when I finally got over the guilt that I used to feel about spending time on my own writing. I would always think that I should do something else first, whether it's grading papers or working on a new lesson or workshop or, you know, family life too. So writing used to be what I did with my leftover time, and that didn't work. I feel kind of dumb saying that I really didn't think about how being a writer is my job too, and also being a reader. So I now have several articles going at the same time, and I know that doesn't work for everybody, but I tend to get inspired by one topic at a time, and so I'll work on that particular article, and if I run into a log jam, what I'll do is I just put it aside for a little while, 24 hours, 48 hours, and I pick up another draft of something I'm working on, and I can see everything new and fresh. So while I do try to write at least 3 to 5 times a week, and I have, you know, based on my schedule when I'm teaching, I tend to write in the office after I'm done teaching. But I do firmly believe that moving between topics and putting one piece aside for a bit makes me see the weaknesses of each one so that when I pick it up, I feel creative again. And when I talk about being productive, I can be productive and not reach an end, because to me, the progress that I want to make is one day might just be a paragraph that I want to get just right, or it may be, you know, drafting another page. And if I try to quantify too much, like if I try to tell myself that I will write 2 pages a day, which I think is Philip Roth's big statement, that, you know, you write 2 pages a day, and before you know it, at the end of a year, you have this huge book. But if I try to do that kind of thing, or even say, okay, I'll write twice a week for X number of hours each time, I find I'm focused more on getting that milestone done than actually on my content, and I don't think I'm a very good writer. So I've come to accept the fact that progress is a relative term, and I'm okay with that, and as long as I am thinking and writing on a daily basis, that works for me.
Thank you. Barbara?
Well, you know, for the first article that was actually published, I dedicated the summer to writing, and I planned on living on my 9-month salary paid over 12 months, and that's what I did. I didn't teach. I didn't feel guilty about not teaching. And even when my business-minded father inquired, are you working? I said, yes, I'm working as a writer this summer. And I said that the next time you read a captivating novel or view a film, know that a writer made the scene come alive through their craft, and that was their work. So I had to tell that to myself, so I realized that there was a reason for me doing this. And a lot of this is mental and how you think and how you view yourself. If you're going to put yourself down, if you're not thinking that writing is worthy, then that infiltrates your writing. I focused my time and space to my job, which meant that I got up early. For me, I needed to exercise in the morning. I think somebody else said that too. And then I went to the library. I had a workplace away from my house, away from my phone, away from like cobwebs that needed to be, cleaned in my house. I got out of the house for that. And I even took a break from the internet. I wasn't going to go and check email while I was supposed to be writing. I set up shop in one cubicle in the far right section where I resided every day, Monday through Friday, for the months of June and July. And I remember one of the Regents professors who was a prolific writer. She was a qualitative writer, and she said to me, if you don't devote 4 straight days to your writing, nothing will get done. And that was so true, as I could see the iterations of my efforts after the end of the week. And sometimes, though, I kept writing into the evening, but there is an economics principle that I share with my students, the law of diminishing returns, which notes that there is a point from which the interest wanes, as does the effectiveness of the product. So, you know, just to keep doing marathons isn't going to work, but that whole summer dedicated really did help with kicking it out the door and getting that acceptance.
Okay, well, let's close out the audio conference by having each of you give some advice for other authors still struggling to kick their article out the door.
Karen?
I've thought a lot about this, and my advice for others still struggling to get their article out the door includes a number of things. One is to investigate your style of attaining success elsewhere in your life and to apply it. How have you gotten through other struggles before? For me, it's using resources and being well-trained, so I read a lot and talk and work with a lot of people. For you or other listeners, it might be setting up a behavior plan with reinforcement scheduled in, making a date with friends after writing for a certain amount of time or a certain number of pages, or with whatever else might fit different people. I suggest that people follow journal guidelines, understanding the format and the style of articles published in the journal that you're aiming at, and be thoughtful about responding to reviewers' comments. They're all meant to make the paper better. They can hurt, but to set them down for a short time and then come back to them soon and see really how their intention is to make the paper better. Another is to have a writing sponsor or a buddy or both. I highly recommend, as you could probably tell, reading Publish and Flourish, Become a Prolific Scholar by Tara Gray, and also How to Write a Lot, A Practical Guide to Productive Academic Writing by Paul Sylvia. And then read them whenever you feel scared or stuck. They're short books. They're also concrete about the doing. They're not about feelings. They're not about being blocked. They're about being planful and intentional. Exercise. Move around when you've been sitting for too long. Have as much regular exercise as you can. Take care of your body in the process. Another one is to stay in the document. One of the valuable pieces of writing every day or writing frequently is that you stay close to it and it doesn't get far away and it doesn't get scary. There's no magical block of writing time. Daily doses create progress. Being courageous in the face of whatever you're dealing with. Also, writing can be lonely and sometimes terribly so. So find ways to be social if you need social outlets. Like I've mentioned, sometimes I write across the kitchen table or across the table at the office from my writing buddy, even when her daughter might be playing dolls or playing house nearby, we all still get our work done. Stay in the document, even if you're scared. One thing is perhaps easing your way in by checking references to citations, looking for paragraph topic sentences, or to see if you've defined concepts or words on their first use. Even those fine-tuning elements help, they have to get done anyway. So sometimes on the rougher days, they help to get you back into the document. And then if you have a creative outlet like journaling, painting, writing poetry, whatever it is, doing these things might help you get through the fears to write on any given day. My last piece is just, again and again, to be courageous.
I think some of the points that I think are very important would be to try to get to the bottom of what is causing the logjam in your writing. It could be a repeated pattern that you see in other parts of your life. It can go back to longstanding habits or ways of thinking, and that I think is important to explore. And reorganize your daily schedule until you find your best working hours at that time. Again, as I say, this may change. It certainly changes for me, and I've just decided that there is no perfect solution that's going to last that long, so I have to keep changing it up. See how simple you can make your article. And checking the word limit, you probably don't have any choice to get it in the allotted space. When you bog down on one task, switch to another. It doesn't have to be another article, but you could write your cover letter. You could reform the bibliography. Sometimes, you know, reformatting to fit another style is a chore in itself. Review the problems in your manuscript, what you're not finding a solution to, just before you fall asleep, because several times I woke up in the morning with a problem solved, with the solution was it just kind of surfaced while I slept. I'm also giving due priority to the other areas of your life, visiting with friends, getting exercise, reading, gardening, life's housekeeping tasks. There's always a big list of them. And I found writing those down, especially the major ones, helped me a lot because I could see that it was a finite list. I could get those things done. And then they would be done, and there wasn't a constant supply of them. And writing things down when I start to feel overwhelmed about anything, because that helps you reestablish that feeling of simplicity, because it doesn't, they don't keep continuing on in an endless loop. You can tie them down by writing them down. And those are the things that I think would be, have been very helpful to me.
Thank you, Jane. Carol?
Well, for me, I think that rather than having that publish or perish attitude that can really stymie your efforts, if you think about writing as an opportunity to share with others what you know and how you know it, that helps a lot. I also think, you know, just to read and read and read, find a favorite academic piece, a piece that you really liked how it flowed, and pick it apart, see how it works, and then use that knowledge as a recipe for your own articles. I do also think that developing your ideas, especially if they were conference presentations, sometimes we let those go sit on the shelf, but really to get those conference presentations out and target them to a particular journal and your audience's needs, figure out the audience need with that topic and just get going, just start it off. I also think that you should keep focused on your mission. You know, repeatedly ask yourself while you're writing, you know, what does my audience need to know about my topic and how can I best teach them or reach them? Sometimes I get so focused in, or used to get so focused in, on the format or the genre that I was writing that I would forget about the audience and not really it's easier to continue when you're thinking about, okay, so what does my audience need to know next? What's next? It's just a much easier, freeing way of thinking. And I also think it helped me to recognize that, you know, my academic writing heroes didn't begin there, that they also had to find their zones. And so give yourself some freedom to figure that out for yourself. Just think one step at a time and one acceptance at a time. And before you know it, your CV just looks bigger and bigger, and it works.
Thank you, Carol. Barbara?
You know, I have to go back to advice from one of my mentors, and that's David Berliner, who is who was the Dean Emeritus of Arizona State University, and he writes and presents all over the world. And he just said to me, and this is what I give advice to everyone else, you have an interesting story to tell, so tell it. And if I don't write it, it's not going to get told. If it's sitting in my, you know, pile box, it's not going to get out there. And so what I have to suggest is basically each writer has a unique way of bringing a body of information to others. And I think Jane said, identify your procrastination tendencies, okay? If you are going out, looking around at, you know, shopping or exercising, okay, we'll have a limit for that. Set your timer, and then after that, we have to get down to writing. And I also would suggest to set your writing up as if it was a puzzle piece. You know, move things around, see how the data works for you, play with it a bit. And, you know, I would work towards a draft date, set a goal for a draft date, maybe by the end of June. It's coming up for summer writers. You're going to have a manuscript that's ready to go. And I also think that your area of expertise is unique to you. I mean, on the other hand, I haven't met anyone who doesn't have an opinion about everything. And until you're receiving feedback from reviewers or an editor who will send you an email that states, "We are delighted to inform you that your manuscript blank has been accepted for publication," you sort of, to me, should keep your work to yourself. We get so touchy about our writing, sometimes we don't share it. You know, we want to share with everyone, but I would suggest not to share it until it's ready to go, because you might have to tweak it a bit for publication. My first article didn't require one revision prior to publication, except for a few references, and that's a goal for all writers who really devote the time to what they know best, their research type topic. I also suggest that people have fun in the writing process. If you look at it as a chore, it's going to feel like a chore, and you're going to try to avoid it. Also, I think that if you're, you know, going to go with a new writer or someone who's trying to get something kicked out over the summer, they should also look at really study the journal that they want to submit to. Sometimes people just randomly send out, and they don't know the topics that were already published over the course of the last two publication cycles or what the journal's really looking for.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, Karen, Jean, Carol, and Barbara, for sharing your experience in kicking your journal articles out the door. Kicking It Out the Door, How to Finally Submit Your First Journal Article is an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.